Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. There's a lot of turbulence in the news these days. One of the challenging things about these period in politics is the ratio between traditional policy analysis and sloganism. There's not so much analysis, and there's lots of slogans. There's a use for slogans in spiritual practice. They are statements that are used to reprogram the mind when it is lost in confusion. They are based on an analysis of life and a commitment to truth. For instance, Pema Chodron has commented about Lojong, a practice of using slogans to help one develop compassion for oneself and others. The preliminary slogans of the Lojong practice are 1. Maintain an awareness of the preciousness of human life. 2. Be aware of the reality that life ends, death comes for everyone. 3. Recall that whatever you do, whether virtuous or not, has a result. What goes around comes around. 4. Contemplate that as long as you are too focused on self-importance and too caught up in thinking about how good you are or how bad you are, you will suffer. Obsessing about getting what you want and avoiding what you don't want does not result in happiness. In a 2004 film called Outfoxed, director Robert Greenwald described how Fox News began using repetition to steer interpretations of the day's news stories. This is a kind of a sloganism. This trend has continued, and polarization has undoubtedly led both camps on any issue to find and make the best use of a slogan. Unlike the Lojong slogans, which are dedicated to truth, political slogans are designed to sway support. This would all be fine if issues were simple, but issues are never simple, hence the need for policy analysis. Slogans are easy to remember and often emotionally charged. They get distributed by opinion shows and social media. Policy analysis, on the other hand, is long and dense and nuanced. It's conducted by experts and reported by serious journalists, and it can be boring to read. That's why the slogans made by those with agendas usually win our attention. What we need more of in our exterior life is effort to see clearly. The yoga practice for that is to still the mind, to allow the whole of consciousness to pull together, away from fragmentation and distraction. That helps to deliver the patience, compassion, perspective, an interest in understanding things as they truly are. Then we can tackle analysis. Looking back on how many people were swayed by slogans in 2016, perhaps you yourself, we see how hard it is to distinguish the truth. It requires balance and a willingness to hear all sides. It asks us to confront our biases. It requires us to remember that we are all part of the same great dance of life, each operating from what we truly believe is best. Each of us is doing that. We see in the news lately confirmation that there are actors in this great dance of life who will play on our emotions to sway support. The right response isn't anger, indignation, retribution, etc., but to know what's going on for real, and to take the effective steps in response. While I'm happy to informally complain over coffee about the audacity of certain actors in the current episode of our drama, I'm always also reading, listening, and trying to get inside the heads and hearts of those actors, to be compassionate toward them while acting in a way to steer us toward truth. In other words, you don't have to agree, but you can understand. To quote Pema Chodron again about the spiritual use of slogans, we can use our difficulties and problems to awaken our hearts. Rather than seeing the unwanted aspect of life as obstacles, Lojong presented them as the raw material necessary for awakening genuine, uncontrived compassion. So fight the good fight. Make America great or resist, but keep your own balance and be as effective as a samurai. Namaste. Jen Vagios has been playing instruments and singing her entire life. She's a 500-hour Ishta yoga teacher. She holds a master's degree from Columbia in applied physiology and nutrition. She orchestrates sound bath experiences, gathers unicorns, and spreads joy. As an expert in the field of health and wellness for over 15 years, Jen nourishes her students' hearts, minds, and ears while teaching yoga throughout Westchester County in New York. Jen assisted my class during her teacher training at Ishta, and we got to catch up last week after meditation class. Hi, Jen.
Hey, Peter.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Just had meditation class, and then Joe's coffee.
Yeah. Both were awesome.
Yeah.
Coffee after meditation, preferably not before.
Right. Yes. Can be challenging.
Yeah.
Unless you're falling asleep.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. That's an interesting thing about like a tantric approach to yoga is that there aren't so many rules, but you still have to pay the piper in terms of whatever you do, it's going to have an effect. It's just you have to decide, is the effect good or bad?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I know myself very well. I cannot have caffeine before I meditate.
Yeah.
Otherwise, my eyes will be wide open and I'll just sit there and do a lot of things.
A lot of thinking.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No stillness.
No. Great. But
that's okay.
Yeah. And we were talking about karma, you were saying.
Yeah.
Before we got
online.
You were.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
You brought up karma. And I can't remember what you said because I was just so like, I was in the zone. But you did talk about how meditation can help us move through our own individual karma with ease. And I would love for you to talk more about that.
Okay. Karma.
Karma. I feel like we can go on and on.
Yeah. Well, there's that old saying, my karma ran over your dogma.
Oh.
But on a more sincere note, we have karma. It's kind of crazy because that word is in the lexicon of our culture as a sort of either a joke or something that means I don't have any free will.
Right.
Or there's so much instant retribution that if I do something, it's going to come back and haunt me.
Yes.
But the more comprehensive notion of karma is that it's the action of the universe. It's what's taking place in the universe. It's the name of the ongoing thing. Like if you've ever gone to a movie set, the whole crew is there and they're doing all this stuff and the actors are just standing around, right? And they're all like on their correct locations.
Yeah.
Whatever their like little cross marks of tape are, right, and whatever. And then everything's set and the director says, action. And it's like the world starts, right? All those things begin.
Yeah.
So in the picture of the yogic, or the yogic picture of the world, of the universe, there's an action that began. And the timing that scientists understand is that it's at the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
In the yoga literature, it's just described as like the birth of the universe. You know, it was like a moment when Brahman was asleep, and then there was a phone call.
And then there was specifically a phone call.
And he said, it's time.
Hey.
And here comes the world, right?
Yeah.
And so that action is the karma moving through. And when you, it's helpful to look at karma from that big picture, because then we as beings in the universe are just a part of that big karma. In our own self-view, our own little worldviews, we think we are so important and we think that, you know, what we're dealing with is such a big deal.
Yeah.
But in the karma of the universe, It's just like a part, like the part that one of our cells plays in our body. You know, we're playing in the universe.
Ooh, that's juicy.
Yeah.
That's good. So basically at the Big Bang, and also when we are created into form, when we take on form, a karma is implanted in our own form.
Yeah.
That's basically, and then we are living through that.
Yeah,
we're expressing that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So there's, you know, and the level of where is that implanting, where is that choosing of what is the karma going to be, you know, you could think that back all the way to the beginning, which I kind of do. I sort of think that we're looking at things from a mind that's intentionally been limited to be in this environment that we are. So everything seems very small and everything seems like it's happening in time. But from the universe's perspective, who knows, right?
Who knows? Yeah.
From the universe's perspective, like I was saying this morning, there may be multiple universes going on all at the same time.
Yeah.
Just as like a playing out of creative idea, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I wonder where did that all come from, these jokes about karma? Where did that come from?
Well, it's, probably
karma,
it was...
Karma will get you.
Yeah, probably someone heard about this idea, you know, this philosophy, and was trying to make fun of it.
Yeah. Sure.
And then it just became more commonly heard than a thorough description.
Yeah. So that's a very helpful way of you putting it, especially when you think of the grander scheme of things.
Right.
Instead of as an individual.
Yeah. So when you're coming down the road and something happens to you, you know, and you go, how could this have happened to me?
Right.
It's like, well, because it's your karma, you know, I mean, we do the best we can at trying to sort through life and prepare for things and arrange for things, but you can't control it. It's
right.
going on.
Right. Right.
And so what you can do is deal with things in the best way possible. So you can take on something happening to you as, well, yeah, I mean, what else are you, what am I, that's what happened.
Right.
And then there's no more energy wasted on that thing. There's only what now? What do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So people who have a big health issue encounter that in such a visceral way, right? I used to be able to do X, then I had this problem, and now oh my God, this is going to be different. And then what do you do with that? You could become utterly depressed and never heal.
Right.
Or you could do a whole spectrum of, you know, dealing with it, being graceful through it.
So it's probably safe to say people who are a little more aware of what karma actually is, you can choose, because it's choice, on as to how you move forward based on what is coming at you in your life.
Yeah, but the choice is, of course, part of living. In other words, life isn't so simple, like, oh, look, I realized something, so now everything's different. It's like it's going to be a work to constantly remind yourself and to constantly face the challenge and face the emotion, but to rebound from it faster and faster is something that you can gain.
Right. And also to not place, you ever notice, I think we all have noticed, there are people or a person that seems to constantly have something coming at them that's mm-hmm. just, it's like nothing is ever easeful.
Right.
There's just always something, health issues, family dynamics, work stress. I mean, there are people who are just constantly dealing with something.
Yeah.
And then to top it off, if they play the role of woe is me and victim, then it just gets into this like spiral of constant.
Right.
They're not going to move past it ever. It's going to keep happening.
Right. It's like you're looking for the thing that's bad.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's very, there can't. Yeah. It's interesting. I've caught myself asking, not recently, but in years past, based on probably conversations we've had here at Ishta, things such as why do these things keep coming my way in a good way? It's almost like we're waiting for the bad stuff to start happening.
Yeah.
Why is everything?
We don't deserve that.
Right. Like, why do I deserve this? Why is this happening? I feel like I'm on cloud nine. When is this going to end? Mm-hmm. Like, we look for the doom.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as though I've moved past that thought process, but it took a long time.
Yeah.
It took a lot of doing nothing.
Yes. reference to meditation. Yes.
Reference to meditation.
Yeah.
Do nothing. No need to ask the why.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and no matter what sort of realization or about life one comes to, you know, like, oh, you know, life isn't so bad. It can be this, that, or as long as it's focusing on what am I doing? How am I being, regardless of what's going on with me? That's a fruitful place to be. But life is really good at tricking us into thinking that things are going to be X way from now on.
Right. Right.
And, you know, sometimes I feel like the more understanding you get, the more challenges you get given, you know?
You know, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. That is true.
So we have to be wary of being cocky about it or being, you know, like, oh, now I'm so clear.
Everything's going to run smoothly because I am now aware.
Yes, exactly.
No, yeah, that brings up a good point to stay humble. And I always remind, you know, I share this with a lot of people. You never know it all.
Mm-hmm.
You actually never know it all. And so constantly being a student and just reminding yourself that you're not the best at anything. Mm-hmm. You're not the best yoga teacher or no,
right.
It's a gift that I feel as though what I share is a gift.
Right.
But I don't see myself as higher or lower than anyone. It's just, this is what I'm serving. This is what I'm sharing. This is a purpose.
Yeah. This is where you found yourself in this karma.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was watching a film by Michael Moore, the activist, mm-hmm. and he was interviewing some people in, I believe it was, this piece of it was in Iceland, mm-hmm. I want to say. And they had this big crash of their economy because the banks there were heavily invested in those, you know, the housing market stuff. And so this guy ran for office as the mayor of the main town,
uh-huh.
and Reykjavik, I think. And he was a comedian. That was his former profession.
Oh.
And so he called himself the best.
Oh.
And that was like whatever the party was, it was the best party. And the reason was that in that culture, they never will say that. That you can't, there's no such thing as being the best. You can't advertise, this is the best coffee.
Oh, wow.
Or we are the best insurance company or anything like that. It's like, how could you possibly say that? That would be ridiculous for you to imply that.
Right.
Right. And so culturally, we have a totally different thing to deal with in the US.
So different.
Yeah.
Where
we're always being encouraged by marketing gurus to figure out what's our niche in which we are the best.
That's such a good point. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even know that was a thing in Iceland. That's a fun fact.
Yes.
And then yet here we are in New York City where you're constantly trying to, not you and I, but you're constantly feeling the need that you need to prove yourself, that you need to make a mark, that there's a certain level of competitiveness. And I've totally fallen prey to that.
Yeah.
I was driven by, I wouldn't say competitiveness, but more perfectionism.
Mm.
For a bulk of my life. And it drove me insane. and then I came and found yoga. Or yoga found me.
Yeah.
Because I was ready to change.
Right.
I was...
And then you said that even when you began teaching, the places you were teaching were very competitive.
Yeah, there was a lot of... And who's to say that it wasn't internally that I was feeling that way, that I pulled that up and thought that, and that it versus it, did it actually exist?
Right.
But I would say a lot of the, there was no team sense. There wasn't a sense of community.
Yeah.
Other than with the students.
Yeah.
But with amongst the teachers, I would safely say it felt competitive because you had to hit certain numbers, knowing that if you didn't, that you might get laid off.
Right.
Your class could get canceled. And so it was like you're living in fear as a yoga teacher.
Yeah.
And it just felt, something felt wrong about that.
Right.
Something felt wrong about that. I felt very stressed out when I was starting out as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild.
I think it's a challenge for new teachers, and you know, we have business class in teacher training,
right?
And it's it's one of those things that you're embodied, you know, so you have to deal with the earth.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And so we have to figure out how do I make a living, and am I supposed to be making a living through my teaching, or am I supposed to be teaching in addition to making a living?
Right.
Which is a question of karma and dharma, you know, dharma of like, what is my life supposed to look like?
Right.
You know, I was talking with Trina Morris, who's another Ishta grad, and she has this company, Style Root, and she tries to figure out like, what's your cocktail of work that satisfies you? So she no longer thinks about like having a job, unless that's the right cocktail. You might need several things going on. And I thought that was a brilliant approach. I mean, I stumbled into that myself.
Right, right. You know, it's funny. I recently was listening to, I believe, a podcast by Marie Forleo. And it's funny, the timing of it, because she specifically said something similar, that who's to say that you need to niche and just have one thing you do. Meanwhile, she shared a little bit of her background and how she was a dance. I think she was a choreographer at one point. She, I think, was an editor at one point. She now runs business school. I mean, she's kind of gone all over the place, which is a little bit how I have felt. And so I felt like she gave me a little bit of permission to, and it also reminded me I am a multi-passionate person,
right?
And that's okay.
Right.
That's, who's to say that I have to just be a yoga teacher?
Yeah.
There are a lot of things I like to integrate everything I've learned. I like it, just it, that's what inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny that you just said that. It's just be a yoga teacher. Why can't you have other things that you do?
Well, Wendy and I used to get in a little bit of a not quite an argument, but because she was working in the arts and I'm an artist. And so I was often talking about stuff that she was working with and the different artists she was working with. And she would sometimes go, you know, I'm just so sick of these people. And that, you know, this notion of like high art or the importance of art and this and that. And she said, you know, what's wrong with being creative or being expressive in a environment that isn't calling it art? You know, there's like this idea of multi-person, you know, multiple interests in a person, that you're living and you're expressing all kinds of things, including creative, including healing, including self-discovery, etc.
Including geeking out about anatomy.
Yeah. And if somebody turns out, you know, like teaching yoga is a part of what they want to do, you know, yeah, maybe that becomes through their karma and their dharma, their career, and maybe it doesn't.
Right, right. I do feel, and also I feel in my particular path, I've been, I don't want to use the incorrect terminology, but I do feel as though I've been pulled more and more and more towards a purpose and truth. And I've been using, and my sankalpa, What came up for me, I believe it was last year, was truthfulness. Mm-hmm. And this year...
Sankalpa meaning your intention, your... Yeah.
Yes, my intention. And it, oddly enough, it pulled me back into what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I don't question it. It's just right. Really cool. It's very cool that I really do feel that I've been pulled into the direction that I'm meant to be at this moment.
Yeah.
At this moment, you know, without overthinking it, without, I don't look backwards, like, hold on a second, I went to school for this and here I am doing this, which is completely, to an extent, out in left field.
Yeah.
But however, it all comes together.
Yeah.
All of it. And so, and that's okay. That's okay to share all interests. To me, it all has purpose in regards to helping people. You know, my whole thing is I'm really good at helping people find and cultivate calm.
Mm.
And just whatever that means. And that could come from
many. You do it by laughing.
I do it by laughing. Totally. Yeah. I know that, my voice can be soothing to people, very much like yours. I remember the first time I heard your voice, I was like, I think I'm in samadhi from Peter's voice. And, you know, it's just, I've stopped overthinking, I guess. Mm-hmm. You could say the perfectionism has... It's taken a very long time mm-hmm. for me to really let that fall away. But man, did I fight with that for a long time. Yeah. Man, did I fight with my identity.
Yeah. Well, we want to figure things out and we want to be directive and be good, you know, corporate people or whatever our business idea is. And
the shoulds.
Yeah. And it's really hard to just go with what's going and... be totally in that. I was thinking on the way over here, I watched a show years ago, and one of the characters was this Native American who was having trouble holding his job because he had this job where he was supposed to be somewhere at a certain time, and this is probably super simplified for the, whatever kind of, you know, drama I was watching on TV. But the guy shows up at his work and the boss says, you're 2 hours late again. And he says, oh, well, I don't know. I was on my way here and this woman was broken down on the side of the road with a flat tire. So I helped her change the tire. And then I came right here.
Right.
And the boss's perspective was, well, why did you do that? You were going to be late to work. And his was, because that's what was in front of me.
It's
like
good.
I'm living in the moment, right? And now I'm here at work, right? So that's a hard thing. Again, culturally, that's a tricky thing for us to get with, that whatever you find yourself doing is probably what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Jen and I will be right back. Stick around. Join me for an Easter yoga retreat in Antigua in the British Virgin Islands. Did you hear that? An Easter yoga retreat in Antigua with me and Ishta teacher Petra Rekbrandt, who is the author of Yin is the New Black. So you'll get a good dose of yin yoga, a good dose of all kinds of other yoga, meditation, good chat. There's fun stuff to do there. It's a kind of all-inclusive package. There's a link in the show notes to it. If you're like me, you're sick of winter, so retreating to Antigua sounds divine. It's March 29 through April 3rd. And again, check the show notes for the link. Then in August, join me, Wendy Newton, and Ulrika Norbury for Yoga and the Art of Living Creatively. We're heading off to a beautiful countryside location in Normandy, France, and we'll be working, talking, doing yoga, making some creative stuff, whether you're creative or not. And it's going to be so much fun. Can't wait. Check it out. PeterFurco.com. And there you can also find out information about classes and workshops that I'm teaching, in addition to all the details about these retreats. See you there. I mean, you, and then you follow your desires to whatever you want to be doing next.
Right, right. For sure.
But you may not even see the fulfillment of those desires in the way that you want, you know?
Oh, totally. I've been in that stage, phase, whatever you want to call it, where I've been what I thought I wanted. It was like false. It was funny. It was like false passion.
Yeah.
It was what I think it was more what I thought I should be doing. Mm. And it's really funny. And eventually I figured out, hold on a second. Like, this isn't really what I'm not ignited by this. This is not illuminating me, inspiring right. me, and had to make the decision to let that part of who I thought I should be and what I should be doing go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can be kind of a mental, can cause you kind of some craziness.
Yeah. Well, I think that it also is another testament to taking the time to do meditation, to create some space, because a lot of people try to think their way out of that kind of stuff, you know, or plan their way out of that. And,
right.
you know, sometimes it just takes like being able to see, wait a minute, I'm not doing that anymore. This is what I'm going to do now, because this is what makes sense.
Right.
I mean, I've had that happen like my whole life. I was so certain I was going to be an artist of some form. I played music forever.
Yeah.
You know, and yet none of those easy breaks for music ever really came about, even though I was always working on it. And all these other things, all these other skills that I've acquired over time have built themselves into what we're doing here, being in podcasting, knowing how to run this, you know, software and hardware and microphones and whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing that kept coming about was not a record contract, but a yoga class and another yoga class, and then to be a teacher trainer and so on. And so, and now that I've sort of surrendered from that, like, I didn't pick up my bass for years, like, you know, and something that was so much my identity.
Yeah.
And then now I'm doing kirtan.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like fun.
Fun. See, the name of the game is fun.
Yeah.
If there is no fun involved,
yeah,
I don't know how to exist.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I was the flip side of that, where I started with, I started early in childhood with music.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Your father's a musician.
My father's a musician. Yeah, I think I told you this the last time we hung out, and I used to sneak downstairs and bang the drums and play all the instruments. And I don't remember where, I want to say in high school, the script switched, because I felt very lost, because to be honest, I sucked at science.
Wow.
I was really, it was not my thing. And I excelled in the arts still, in music. I tried athletics and then got kind of obsessed with like soccer and playing sports. And then I didn't know what to do after that. I'm like, okay, I'm graduating high school. Like, what am I going to do with that?
Right.
And I felt completely bewildered. And I believe it was my mom that suggested nutrition.
Uh-huh.
I think just because I had an interest in cooking and food, and there was an eating disorder and friends with eating disorders. And so I was like, all right, cool. That sounds like fun. And I went to school for that. Pretty much my entire education was nutrition, including graduate school. But I always had music in the background. I was always taking lessons. I was taking music theory. I was taking everything, whatever I could take and fit in during that crazy, insane education period, I did. And I worked in that field for a while, and I hit a level of stress that was obscene. And I was crapping out. Basically, my body was falling apart. I was falling apart, and I was a mess. Which is kind of weird, being that I was in the health field,
right?
And a nutritionist.
I think it's actually kind of typical.
Yes. The more I learned about the field, the more I saw what a mess a lot of people are in that in that business. And the last company I worked for went under, and I, you know, I was a mess at that time because it's like, hold on a second. This is my identity. Right. This is who I am. I am a nutritionist for this company.
Right.
And this, and I took time to, I had the time, I had the freedom at that point to explore my creative side. And I dabbled in food photography and back into music. And then I was like, you know, I like this yoga thing. I've met some really cool teachers from this lineage mm-hmm. called Ishta. Mm-hmm. And
you knew Tev first, right, of the Finger Clan?
Right. I knew the Finger Clan. I had met him, although he didn't suggest yoga or mm-hmm. anything, but I knew some of the family. And so I was introduced, I guess you could say, to Ishta further from the family. And mm-hmm. and then I pretty much just signed up one day.
Yeah.
It's like, I was one of those people that, like, I will just sign up. I don't mm-hmm. question. Okay, I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
And so I did. And that changed the path in the best possible way. That really meeting people like you and Mona and Al, and as much as I rejected meditation, I had no idea that I was not breathing. I did not know how little I was breathing.
Yeah.
I was basically choked off from life.
Yeah.
And so through that, I took quite a few years. Alan will share, you know, Jen, you were trying to be something that you're not.
Mm.
And it's funny that he said that. He said that several years after knowing me. And I'm like, holy cow, you're so right. Mm. I was so caught up in, I am this nutritionist and I went to Columbia and I am intelligent. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I'm not in that world anymore.
Right.
And right. I'm basically, things are just coming through me. Music is back in my world.
Mm-hmm.
And it organically and naturally happened. It was not forced.
Yeah.
It just happened. I feel like that's there was maybe a moment, part. But
well, I mean, you were doing all along.
Right.
But the doors open up. I think that's the fascinating thing. Mm-hmm. And that's this gracefulness with your karma. You know, that you do the best you can.
Right.
But certain things will become easy. It's like that song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat Gently Down the Stream. It's like if you ever row a boat on a pretty fast stream, you basically are just like keeping yourself from headed toward the rocks. You know, you sort of steer the clear way.
Right.
And I think it feels more and more like that as you let go of what you think things should work out as. You just start to say, oh, wow, look at this. This person called. This is interesting.
Right.
And then you go down that road.
Right. Oh, absolutely. No, things, yes. And I agree with you. That's exactly what I would say. There was a little bit of starting to change how not share my own identity, but start sharing, hey, people. just in case you didn't know, I'm also a singer and a musician.
Yeah,
and you know, it's funny how people came out and saying, like, I had no idea.
That's funny.
That's part of you.
Did you have a private practice in nutrition?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So in between your corporate work, you were doing that, and then you...
Yes.
Then this is when you introduced this other notion of who you were.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did. I stuck it out with nutrition as much as I could. I'm like, okay, so maybe I'm not supposed to work for people. Maybe I do better on my own, mm-hmm. which is an ongoing joke in my family that none of us like to work for people. Actually, none of us like to work.
Yeah.
And we're all creatives and artists and we like to be on our own schedule and, I like to sleep, things like that. And so, yes, I did see clients privately, and I realized, I literally have said this to many people, I feel like the life force is getting sucked out of me by it's too much of, I feel like I'm giving too much.
Yeah.
There is not a balance, and I feel drained every time I work with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Completely wiped out mentally, physically. And so I had to put a cap on how many people I would see. And then eventually I just started like kind of pulling it off my website. Like, you know what? Not seeing any clients right now.
Uh-huh.
But my ego wanted to say, However, I've gone to this school and I have this education and these degrees. And now I'm just like, nope. That's great. That is, yes, I'm educated, but I don't want to work right now. Maybe again, I haven't completely shut it down, but it doesn't bring me joy.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful thing to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patreon. Can't help but talk about Patreon because it's how I fund Peter's podcast. Show you value this content by becoming a patron at any level you like. I'll send special rewards your way even. Patrons recently got a Yoga Nidra recording that I made just for them. And you can even use Patreon to arrange for a genius consultation with me or to get a mantra targeted at your goals or challenges. Check it out today at Patreon, that's patreon.com/Peter's Podcast. Do it.
Oh, however, I still like sharing information with people. If somebody asks me a question, it's usually about poop. That's kind of my thing. Like digestive issues are my thing because I struggled with them. Uh-huh. I love helping people with that specific issue. Mm-hmm. But if you come to me with other ailments and health issues, I kind of shut down. Mm. I shut down to an extent. So
that's the fatiguing place.
That's the fatiguing place.
Interesting.
It is where it was actually Rebecca Cheeks who I give her credit, and I've shared this with her personally, that she really encouraged my music, as did Al. Mm-hmm. The second Al learned about it, he was like, wait, what? Uh-huh. It was the encouragement and the positive reinforcement it fueled me, but it's not because I needed to be told that I'm the best, right?
Yes.
It was getting past the fears and the anxieties and the, but am I good enough?
Right.
To be saying that I'm this now? I'm not a dietitian anymore.
Right.
And so
I know that's a gigantic thing. It's a shift, you know,
huge.
And in our culture right now, in the way the economy is working and everything, people are being asked to do that several times over their lives. Yeah. So, I mean, it's wonderful when we can find the avocation and hold to that.
Oh yeah. 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 And here I am on Peter's podcast. Yeah.
Cool. You can find out more about Jen at www.jennifervagios.com, and there's a link in the show notes. So we're going to talk about et cetera.
Et cetera.
Music. Music, kirtan.
Singing bowls.
Singing bowls.
Gongs.
Yeah. So I hear that all the music stores in town really light up when you approach these days.
I think they feel me coming.
You're expanding your instrument collection.
Yes.
Yeah. So you started with guitar.
Started with the guitar. Well, as a child, I started with the piano and voice. Uh-huh. And then from there, specifically, I went to the flute and then the oboe. And then I went to the glockenspiel.
No way.
Because you can't play the oboe in the marching band.
Ah.
Break that reed right off.
The glockenspiel is like the xylophone, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then from there, the guitar. Mm-hmm. Continue with piano and voice. And at this point now, it's everything.
Yeah.
Now I've got crystal singing bowls, Tibetan singing bowls, a gong, chimes, harmonium. How can I forget my harmonium? Mm-hmm. And probably going to accumulate
more.
The
piano probably helped that.
The piano helped harmonium. That. That was an easy transition. Mm-hmm. And I also have a didgeridoo.
Really?
But I have not mastered that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's
there's this crazy guy who plays in the subway, the didgeridoo.
Oh, really?
He plays it through an effects box, and he sits on one of those Latin percussion boxes. Uh-huh. And he has a tambourine on his foot.
Oh, wow.
And when he gets going, it's amazing.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
It's so awesome to watch.
I'll try to find his info and put it in the show notes because
yes,
maybe there's video
of him. The didgeridoo guy.
Yeah.
The subway didgeridoo guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think he's one of those guys with the sign, you know, like okay. An official subway guy.
That's awesome. They have auditions for that.
For being a subway musician.
Are you kidding me?
And then you get your own sign that has an MTA stamp of approval.
I had and then, no you know, idea.
Then kids like my stepson just go and hang out and play instead of going to school and get money. But
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow. I did not know that was a thing. Mm-hmm. That's a fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you a subway guy?
I thought about it. There were times I thought about it, but never did it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I pretty much just, my whole home is instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're running out of space for other things. Yeah. So,
we both bought new Taylor guitars in the past 12 months.
We did.
I'm loving mine. I did have to fix the action though, like I told you.
Right.
It was too hard to play.
I know. I'm still messing around with mine for sure. I'm already thinking about getting a nylon string.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an addiction. Yeah. It's not a bad addiction though. It's
Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun to, and the reason why it's fun is number one, I get to be creative,
mm-hmm.
and that just comes out of me. And number mm-hmm. two, I then get to share that creativity to inspire other people to, more or less also to find calm through vibration.
Yeah.
To maybe get to a state of meditation that they haven't been able to achieve on their own.
Right.
So right. As you know, with the chanting of the mantra, or maybe just hearing it. It's really powerful and it's so amazing to watch people shift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a gift to be able to give that to people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fundamental act that humans do
mm-hmm.
to make vibration using mm-hmm. their voice. And yet again, there's a lot of cultural commentary in this episode here. But in our culture, you know, we like look for the specialist to do that thing.
Mm.
Like, who's the person who does that singing thing so mm-hmm. well, you know?
Right.
And then we give them awards for it and stuff like that. But it's natural in us to make sound. And,
yeah.
You know, and the traditional spiritual practices harnessed the sound power.
Yeah, we're created from sound.
Yeah, and we can make those shifts. I mean, sometimes now I kind of think of it like, you know, abracadabra. It's like you're using sound in a way that has power. And in ways that we only talk about in those fairy tale kinds of places. But that the whole notion of the fairy tale, I think, comes from the fact that people had power in their voices, in their pronouncements.
Yes, absolutely. I love getting my students to, I guess you could say, shed that fear and anxiety that can often, you know, the second I say, hey, we're gonna do kirtan today.
Right.
You know, I kind of try to ignore what I'm witnessing mm-hmm. from people because I know things are coming up. And so I make it really easy for them by either letting it just be om or a very simple mantra, or I give them cheat sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I print it out and I tell them first, this is how you pronounce it. But honestly, just start saying it. Just mm-hmm. start saying this. Go in. And it's been fun to watch people who I knew had some hang-ups mm-hmm. about doing it mm-hmm. actually participate.
Yeah.
And I do say you don't have to. You can just listen. But it's really fun. It's a way to share music and sound that's purposeful.
Yeah.
You know, I think music has purpose in general. I think all of it impacts us differently, but there are different ways to use mantra and kirtan, as you know, because you actively do it, that you can choose. You know, maybe you don't want to involve yourself in this after my yoga class where I made you sing and do a sing along, but if you recognize the power that it has on your mind, there can be such huge shift.
Yeah. I mean, the word mantra literally means to liberate oneself through the mind.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Well, I wrote this book, Yoga for Artists, you know, where I talk about creativity and the yoga practice, and the yoga practice creating the mental state in the artist to allow creativity to flow. You know, I set up this confluence of the two things, that meditation brings you to a state of experiencing things beyond the ordinary, and then art is a way of expressing those things.
Oh, so beautifully stated. You know, I'm kind of like Al, where I read, but I don't finish reading. Mm-hmm. Actually, Al doesn't read, period, does he?
No, not really.
So I'm like me, where I rarely finish a book, and yet I will get immersed into something for like several weeks and then just put it down and maybe not pick it up for however long.
Yeah, I'm similar.
So don't, oh, good. Yeah. So I would love to read your book, but don't take offense if I read like five pages. But I've heard people doing very specific, I didn't know you were doing the yoga for artists, but what a great, I've also thought about doing yoga for musicians, mm-hmm. So that they can channel and open up their throat and open up this path.
Right.
Right. And get
you're,
things
you're drawing
moving.
A line with your hands from their throat down all the way to your base and back. Yeah.
Yes. Because we know the path.
Yes.
I can't help it. Nobody can see me, but you know me well. I'm very animated.
Yes. I use my hands all the time here.
I was a cheerleader. Not surprising.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh. What?
It was time. What does that mean? It's time for, the universe.
Oh, the universe
start
is calling.
The universe. Action.
Action. Yes. It's time to shift your path. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. I feel at this point, I guess one might say that my karma, I don't know if it's just that I've tuned in so much to that consciousness to just be in a knowing state where I no longer chase what I think I should be doing.
Mm.
I just feel that I'm in that truth and I'm just doing it. I'm just flowing it, flowing through it. And I still crave the learning, but I think that that's also just, it's part of my nature.
Yeah. Well, I think it's natural for us to be curious.
Right.
So we want to know more.
Right.
But that's a part of the, one part of our being, you know, the part of us that lives on the world and doesn't know everything. And
right,
we want
right.
to, we have a craving to know the whole of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what drives us in our intellectual pursuits. And,
right.
you know, as yogis, we find this other way of knowing as well. And that is satisfying, and it provides a different kind of a wisdom as opposed to a knowing of facts.
Mm, yes, right. So on the way back from the coffee shop earlier, he said that, right? It's the wisdom without attaching to, okay, I've learned this now, and here are all the facts I know, but now let go of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not learning to prove something, whereas back in the day, I would definitely say I was clinging to the need to prove something. I was very much attached to the identity.
Yeah.
And that ego-driven, this is what I do, this is who I am, this is what I should do, everyone needs to know that I know this.
Right.
What the heck? Nobody needs to know anything.
Yeah. And I mean, how explicit too that about meditation, that it expands your sense of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So even the idea of identity gets redefined through this practice.
Right. Right.
So you can be completely successful, but that's no your success is no longer tied to this notion of now others see me this way.
Right. Right. It's no longer looking for people to validate what you do. It's just, I am sharing this. This brings me joy. I'm passionate about this. This is part of who I am. And then just letting it come out.
Yeah.
Without worrying about goals and outcomes and should I be doing this, etc. am I good enough? All those labels, all those worries and anxieties and fears that we tend to get caught up in. Like you said earlier in your talk, you talked about just all the stuff that clouds us, keeps us in this, like, you know, the veil on the screen of our minds. Mm-hmm. That just keeps us in that unknowing, in that zone of, well, the mind, the thoughts.
Yeah.
The vritti.
The vritti. Spinning.
The spinning, and yes. The spinning. I think you said the spinning, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome chit chat.
Yes.
So thank many you things so came much. Up.
Yeah.
Unexpected. Thank you.
Yeah. So we'll talk again next time I'm up in Westchester.
Yes. You have to come up for the coffee and the cheesecake.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Jen.
Thanks, namaste. Peter. Namaste.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Peter's podcast. One of my favorite radio stations is doing a fun drive right now where they keep telling you why the station is valuable and ask you to evaluate the same. Peter's podcast is in the same boat. I'm trying to fund this completely off of the appreciation of people who listen so that I don't have to run ads. So please check it out and also come see me. Take a class, have a private. You can do that via Patreon and come on a retreat with me. It's going to be really fun, really valuable. So I'd love to see you. I'd love to hear from you. If you want, you can make comments at patreon.com. There's a blog post that invites you to make comments. And come and see me on retreat or in class. Talk to you soon. Namaste.